Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are talking this morning here in this part of Focus about investing, money management. This is something that we do every month and have been for a very long time. We built it into the schedule so that you would have a regular opportunity to discuss these issues with someone who has a lot of expertise in the area. And we're very happy to have here as our guest, Kevin Waspy. He's a lecturer in finance in the College of Business. One of the core group of folks who's had a very long association with this program, and we're very pleased that he could be here. For a long time, Dave Zinno was kind of our main guy to do this show, and I think we, from time to time, will still be hearing from Dave, but he has passed the baton to Kevin, and he's going to be the regular guy. I'm going away, but he's going to be here. And so I hope you'll take the opportunity to give us a call if you have questions. And I know he'll do his best to help you out. The idea is, you know, we occasionally talk about macro stuff here, but really the idea of these programs is a really hands-on kind of basic thing. So if you have some question about what you're doing with your money and you'd like to discuss it, please do take the opportunity. 333-9455. That's for here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And we also have email. You want to do that? That's fine. That's will-talk, willtalk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you, David. It's always good to be here and kind of bittersweet in today's meeting.
A little bit, because this is you and us, this is the last show that we will do together. And actually, I didn't mention this beforehand, but this show first went on the air in the winter of 81. And at the beginning, there were a number of people that hosted the show. And I first did my first show within about 6 months of the show going on. And then it was a while before I actually became the host. So I was going back and I was looking at the records because I wanted to see, well, when did I actually do my first show? My first Focus program, July 15th, 1981. Do you know who the guest was?
Let me guess. David Zinno.
No, actually, it was you. It was you, Kevin Waspy. You were the very first guy I talked to on the show. And I was really, I was stunned when I saw that. I thought, well, I can't wait to tell you. Yeah. So that says, yes. In fact, Kevin has had a very long association with the show. Actually, even but his he predates Dave Zinno. So I'm really glad that you could be here and doing the show.
Well, thank you. Again, it's bittersweet. One of the things I just like to say is it's been just a great association. I've met so many good people. I've met and had so many good times with people from the station here. I just think that the program that you've you now headed for 30-plus years is one that's just an asset to the listeners. It's a good service, and I commend you on it.
No, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Well, I will go on here to a caller. We have someone to talk to, ready to go. In Indiana, this is Cloverdale, Indiana, on our toll-free line. We'll talk with them. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'd like to know what the heck the Fed's going to do with interest rates. I'm a retiree. I've got cash, and I am not going to get exposed to the stock market. I think it's a total crapshoot. So I'd like to see my CDs and money market funds go up higher than 0.2%. What do I do?
Wouldn't everybody? Yeah. Wouldn't everybody?
Great.
I mean, come on. See, they're forcing us. They're forcing us into the stock market, and I'm not going to do it.
I don't blame you. I understand what you're saying. I guess I can't emphasize more the feeling you have. I hold to the power N.
So I mean, so how do we get to Geithner? How do we get to the powers that be to actually help Main Street instead of Wall Street? This is crazy. It's nonsense.
Well, rather than turning to politics, let's turn to something a little bit more perhaps controllable. And I'm not trying to dissuade you from writing letters, writing your representatives even. If that's an avenue that we should all pursue more, I'm not saying we shouldn't. But speaking of the money aspect of things, I know how punishingly low savings rates are right now, and I know that they've been that way for 3-plus years. And now, to make you feel even worse, I don't see an immediate change to that. I think we're going to see these kinds of low interest rates, I would say, for the foreseeable future. I'm going to say that might be as long as 3 to 5 years going.
talked about at least 2 years. All right, now I got a question that I want to follow with this. What if I want? What should I buy? Should I buy real estate? Should I get into some property? I'm thinking about buying a potential investment out west. You know what I mean? It's like a recreation because I like to hunt and fish. I'm a retiree from industry. So I've got some cash, but I am not going to risk it. And so I'm wondering, should I put it in real estate? What do you think?
Well, again, I mean, I'm seeing some conflict in your statement there. If you're not going to risk cash in the stock market, I really don't know why you'd risk cash in real estate.
Because I have an idea that a particular area is going to grow. Now,
well, I have an idea a particular stock is going to rise in value.
Yeah, you got. Oh no, I
see. I got you, didn't I?
Yeah. Oh no.
See, I got you.
Well, but real estate, you know, didn't real estate always used to be?
Oh, there's that one of two words we shouldn't use.
Yeah, I got it.
Always and never.
Yeah.
Strike those from your vocabulary of investments.
But see, real estate is a real item. You can actually walk on it, stand on it, right? Versus Wall Street, which is, you know, fabulous.
We're having fun with each other, but let's get back to business. There's all good statement. There's good sense in what you're saying, but hear me out. If we're not comfortable investing in a chunk of a corporation that makes something tangible that people need, why would I be comfortable putting my money in an asset that is much less liquid, much less subject to, how should we say, the whim of law? I don't care if it's zoning regulation, tax, how should we say, programs, or whatever else, on a similar type of belief. In other words, the belief that something's going to happen in this geographical area that's going to make this parcel of land increase in value. So again, what I would say is approach any investment possibility with a healthy amount of skepticism and a little bit of prudence. Here's what I mean. Any money that you're going to put, whether it's in real estate or in stocks, ought to be enough that you could afford to lose. And the reason I say that is because for the most part, you've hit the time of your life cycle of earnings, saving, and investing where prudence becomes more important than rate of return.
Oh, you bet.
Okay, so let's back off of that for a minute, and I'm going to take you back to a time-worn approach to managing money prudently, even in today's environment of extremely low interest rates. Set up a ladder of maturities, okay? Play the curve. You set up some amount of money to mature in regular intervals, perhaps stretched out as long as 5 years. And every regular interval of maturity, you have the opportunity to go out and reinvest at the long end of the curve and earn a higher rate of return than at the short end, okay? This strategy...
I know those CDs that you're talking about. I mean, there are those that go out and they earn low at to begin with and then high at the end. But it's still only about 1.5%, isn't it, the end of 3 years?
I understand that, but hear me out. That strategy could be extended. And that strategy might even entail things outside of super safe savings vehicles like certificates of deposit. For example, you might shop for a high-quality corporate bond or maybe even a high-quality municipal bond that has something like 5 years to maturity and use that as the ladder on your five-year structure.
Mm. Who do you like? I mean, they talk about the municipal bonds because they're tax-free typically. I mean, do you have a particular area of the country you think might be a good place for municipal, you know, municipals like West Coast, East Coast? Do you have any feeling?
Well, you have to be a little bit careful. It's more than geography. It has to do with the credit and the quality of the issuer. So, you know, I mean, we could say as a blanket statement, I would avoid the state of California. But as soon as I would say that, there are decent credits within the state of California. There are cities that their budgets are not upside down. There are water and sewer districts where, you know, the cash flows adequately support the debt. So on and so on and so forth. What we're getting into now are the details that a good financial planner can help you with.
Yeah, And those are the about those guys.
Well, and those are the kind of questions that I would come into with a financial planner and ask them if they're capable of doing some grunt research and basically saying, here's why these things make sense. Explain it to me.
Yeah, I know. Well, they also want to, if you give them a portfolio to work with, they always want a percentage of it. They like 1% or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Just for managing it. So you're always starting from a hole with the financial planner wanting to take part of your money to do the research, just like you mentioned.
Well, there are fee-for-services planners that don't charge a fee based on the value of assets under management. There are.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to make any recommendations to any one or two right now on the air, but I'm saying a lot of this goes a lot like you or I would find a new physician, okay? I need a personal physician. How do you find one? You don't go to the Yellow Pages. You talk with friends. You talk with family. You find someone who has a good reputation, who's proven their services with somebody that you know and trust.
Yeah. I think that is a good idea, and I have used that strategy before. Recommendations from people you respect, you know, for everything from buying a car to real estate, that kind of thing.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, that's recommendations are the best of it. But you sometimes wonder if your friends, although you respect them, are as smart as they should be or as discerning. You know, I'm in a quandary. You know, I don't want to get into the stock market. I'm just trying to keep my money from going under inflation, you know?
Well, at this point in time, that's a very difficult task. I understand that. It's a part of the process that we're going through. Hopefully it has a decent conclusion, but I know it's painful at the moment. It's ugly.
Let me tell you the worst thing about retirement. You have too much time to spend money.
Well, there could be worse things, so let's not get into the macabre.
Right.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We are talking this morning in this part of Focus with Kevin Wasby. He's a lecturer in finance in the College of Business and is our regular guy here once a month. He's going to be stopping by, and we're going to do these shows. We've been doing this program for a long time, once a month, a money management show. And the idea is if you have a particular question about your own situation, you're just not quite sure what to do, here is one piece of advice you can put in your basket. Call and tell us about it, and Kevin will tell you what he thinks. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. So what do you think about it for people who would like to have some of their money in real estate and have the luxury of having money to invest? What do you think about REITs, which are essentially like a mutual fund, but the money goes into real estate? And it's a way of spreading out your risk rather than you just going out and buying a piece of property. You're hopefully, you know, the risk is spread out. So if some of it's maybe not good, some of it is.
The good and the bad about REITs is, as you've mentioned, they are a pooling of assets and a pooling of other people's money to purchase those assets. All REITs are not alike. So, again, for the average person investing in real estate and using REITs, maybe the way to do it is to look at an index fund, whether it's a Vanguard index fund of REITs or something similar that has a low expense ratio that doesn't, as our first caller pointed out, put itself immediately behind the eight ball and needs of producing a rate of return to make up for a large management fee. But the reason I suggest something like an index of REITs is as follows. Unless a person wants to do some serious investigation into the actual operation of any single REIT investment potential, there are too many of them that are run too loosely. What I mean by saying run too loosely, they're continually selling new shares, they're continually raising new money, they're continually using that money to buy properties, and they're continually then selling properties that have been in the portfolio for a period of time. There are few REITs that work like a Warren Buffett approach to the investment in real estate. There are few REITs that buy real estate, own it, operate it, and own it for a long time. Otherwise, you're just getting into a scheme that is dependent upon new needs for new money. When things got very tough back in 2007, 2008, when credit markets basically shut down, some of the most devastated asset classes became real estate and also the REITs that were continually dependent upon new issues of either debt or stock to bring new money into the fund to buy properties and refinance properties. Those REITs follow, the same bad possibility of outcome as any single individual over-levering and then needing a constant source of financing to maintain an individual property. Many REITs work that way. So you've got to be a little bit careful in your REIT shopping. You back off from that a step, look at a REIT index. You're basically spreading it across all of the animals, and probably for the average person that doesn't want to do a lot of homework, the best way to think about REIT index investment.
All right. Well, again, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. You can also send us a question by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. And here's a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple things, really. It's one thing with two different angles on it. Concerning the previous caller, without being too insensitive, because I am sensitive to his nervousness about the stock market and what to do and how to invest, what to do with his money and so forth. The bottom line, I think, is become an expert or pay one. That's sort of it. I mean, if you like to have somebody to point at and say, why did you do that, then pay an expert. And if you're comfortable owning your own mistakes or successes, become your own expert.
That's an excellent point.
Along those lines, let me just my question, the thing I'd like really a comment on is, again, and it relates to his feeling of, he doesn't want to do this, he doesn't want to do that, and I understand that. But I think as an average investor, maybe in some ways, I'm a small investor and approaching retirement age, I always felt that in general there were a lot of people with a lot more expertise than I in the pits and in big investing and so forth that more or less had a similar interest to me, that they were interested in making money for a lot of people, and kind of everybody was in the same boat. But I feel like this last financial debacle of the last 3 years or so has made the average investor feel like, hey, there are a lot of people that can really jerk my situation around who have no interest in the same things I do. And that's why they're nervous about, and that's why people aren't, the market's acting erratically and people are hanging out of it and not wanting to get in, and because they feel there's no longer a commonness of purpose. There are small numbers of people who can have huge effects on their portfolio and its value. I'd just like your comment on that general idea. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Well, I think the caller's gotten to, again, one of my favorite themes. In my opinion, the regulatory agencies, the regulatory authorities in the United States should be shot. The results of what have become markets of people but for a few persons is kind of the way I like to categorize things. I think the regulatory authorities should prohibit, just outright ban, certain activities that are actually encouraged right now. I see very little value, and I see much more harm, not only as has happened, but also as potential. One of the things that I'll point out is what is referred to as high-frequency trading. blind pools of capital, the payment for order flows that is allowed to go on. Some of the kind of fundamentals that over the past 15, 18, 20 years have crept into the regulatory environment where 30 years ago were just outright banned, disallowed. The caller mentioned, you know, people's level of confidence. I'll point to just this past fall, the weekend of Halloween, with the failure of MF Global as one of the major clearing members for commodities futures trading, and the way that that was allowed to happen, the way that it's been handled up to this point, I think is just emblematic of the regulatory problems we have in this country. We do not need more regulation. We need sound and prudent and efficient regulation. And I think the markets and the way they act and the way smaller investors are shied away from them pretty much speak evidence to those kinds of changes necessary. So what do you do? Again, I hate to sound like, you know, a rabble rouser, but write your congressman. Where is this process? I mean, if we are supposed to be a people of elected representatives, get involved in government, get involved locally, get involved nationally, but stay involved and don't take no for an answer. Don't say, well, those things are too complicated. Go back to Champaign, that sleepy little town where we don't want to bother your pretty little head about it. That's nonsense.
All right. Other questions are welcome. And again, this is the program that we do every month on the show here. And if you have some really specific question about your financial situation, our guest, Kevin Wasby, will see if he can help you out. And all you need to do is give us a call, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk or will-talk at illinois.edu. So just again, to go back to this is something you've talked a lot about. But again, just to remind people that if they have money, they have cash, and they're concerned about risk, that probably it remains, and even though people are disappointed by the interest rates, it remains the safest thing that you can do is put that into a CD, and that the way that you maximize your potential return is, as you say, to construct this ladder, meaning that you split it up into equal parts, and then you buy CDs with varying lengths of maturities. And then as they mature, then you invest in a new one so you can make it so every 6 months one would become to maturity, or maybe you want to make it so every year one comes to maturity. Mm-hmm. And then that's probably the best way that you can take advantage of the fact that your better rate of return is if you're going to be willing to commit to 2 years or 5 years or, you know, more than 6 months or a year.
Right. That strategy works to enhance liquidity. You have regular maturities. If a need arises, the money is available. It works as a way to smooth interest rates. It also works as a way to increase the average rate of return, because in an environment of an upward sloping yield curve, which means nothing more than the longer the term to maturity, the higher the interest rate, which happens to be the environment 9 days out of 10. You know, so you've got a higher average yield. You've got access to some amount every so frequently, and you're basically blending interest rates higher. It just seems to make sense.
Yeah.
It works in most instances.
Yeah. And as far as, not just to dump more bad news on people as if they don't already know, but at least as far as everything that I read suggests that on interest rates, we should not expect any significant change. It could be a couple years. We'd still be looking at essentially what we're looking at now.
Well, the Federal Reserve has come out earlier this year and basically said, you know, 2014.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a guarantee, but it lets you know what's going on in their minds. They're not seeing any immediate need to increase interest rates or allow interest rates to rise by themselves. I might disagree with that, and most savers and investors probably disagree with that. But again, they're not asking us. they're the people making the decisions.
We're talking this morning in this hour with Kevin Waspy. He's a lecturer in finance at the U of I College of Business. That's our monthly show on money management. We have another call we'll get to in just a moment. First, though, we need to take a short break. This is Focus.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. More information is at KrannertCenter.com.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. We are here for 10 hours a week, 2 hours each morning, Monday through Friday, and we mix up the topics. We hope there's something there that will interest you. In the second hour today, we will be talking about the crisis in the Eurozone, and one of the questions we'll certainly try to ask is what exactly that has to do with us here in the United States, not just what's going to be happening in Europe in the days and weeks ahead. John McCormick will be our guest. He's professor of European Union politics at the Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And I'll mention one more on Monday. Another of our regulars will be here. Scott Spies will be here Monday morning at 10 for our monthly show on home maintenance. So if something needs to be fixed, you got a problem around the house, he can advise you. And you can check the schedule for the rest of next week, and we'll have a whole bunch of different things for you. Hopefully something will interest you. You can check the schedule by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter, Will Public Media, and we're on Facebook. The guest this morning in this hour of Focus is Kevin Waspy. He's a lecturer in finance at the College of Business at the U of I. And he is here to answer your questions. So we can help you out on an investment issue. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Spring Bay is the caller here, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The old story used to be that you could tell someone's wealth of a farm by how large their manure pile was. And according to that, I am a very rich man indeed. I just had about 15 tons delivered the other day, so it looks like I'm a very prosperous person. But along with that is I've got a big stack of firewood, too. And so I have a new way of looking at wealth, which is I got dried wood ready to go, and I've got manure ready to spread, and I've got food in the growing in the ground. So the previous caller was talking about real estate. Agricultural land is always, I think, a good bet. But along with that, on real estate, too, I think that I hear about this shadow inventory that the banks are holding, I think nationally, millions of homes off the market so that at any particular moment, the true worth or value of a home or of a real estate investment is hard to determine or hard to know. And I think maybe a rule of thumb would be, it's at least 15% below the asking price of the value of it. Another thing that has seems to me that's going on with the economy is that we have become financialization has really taken over in our markets and on Wall Street. It seems that people have decided that there's more money to be made by manipulating money than manufacturing or providing a service or a product, but to manipulate money. And in that regard, the derivatives, I think, are still sort of the black hole of risk to the overall economy. And those, I think, are a time bomb perhaps waiting to blow up once again. I'll get off and listen to your comment. I'm enjoying your show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's, again, something I share. We in the finance business need to know that we're a supporting service. We shouldn't be a major component of commerce. I think commerce still revolves or should revolve around products and services that consumers want and the production of them. So I agree.
On to another caller, Champaign County. This is line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'm dealing in have an estate in Champaign County that's basically Champaign farmland, and we have about 500 acres. And I was just wondering what you thought, if we should sell the farmland, which is worth probably $10,000 to $12,000 an acre, and if we did sell it, what we could do with the money. So I'll get off the air and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. It's certainly a timely question, given not only the fact that you're settling an estate, but the value of farm ground, particularly central Illinois farm ground, has probably never been higher. Answering your question is something I won't be able to do, because obviously there are a lot of elements that would or should go into that decision. Some of those things are things that I'm sure you don't want to share on the air. But bottom line is this. Two things. First of all, seek out good counsel. Good counsel is obviously going to start with good legal counsel. You're going to know or need to know the tax ramifications of decisions made today that might impact you or your children for an awful long time. The second thing I would say is this. As it relates to the value of farm ground now, I would love to say that I could make a guarantee that it won't go any higher, or that if it does, it'll only go to $12,800 an acre and then fall, but I can't do that, and I don't think anyone really can. Here's the bottom line. I think you should expect to see a volatility in farm ground that at least comes close to looking at to looking like previous periods of the volatility in the value of farm ground. In other words, farm ground in Illinois, by some measures, has darn near doubled in the past 10 years. Now, I don't think it's going to double again in the next 10 years, but that's only because when I look back over a longer period of history, it doesn't double every 10 years, every 10 years. So, as long as you're not afraid of seeing the value of it decline, if it's good producing ground and you've got a good rate of return on it based on the cost that your inheritance, your step-up basis would be, and based on what I don't know about your personal circumstance or perhaps even any level of debt that might be in place along with the asset of the ground, if you're inheriting a liability of loans against it, those things I don't know, and again, go into making up a good, sound decision. But bottom line is, with all of those things put together, if you're looking at a good earnings rate of return relative to other opportunities right now, that certainly favors keeping it and just saying to yourself, you know, I don't care. I don't care if the next farm sells for $18,000 an acre or the farm next door sells for $6,000 an acre. I don't care. I'm still getting a good rate of return.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully that helps. As you say, really, if you were working with this person, there would be all kinds of things that you would want to know. And this would be an extended and detailed conversation. I find myself thinking, and again, I'm no expert on this, but about the second part of the question that the caller asked. Well, assuming that you sell it, then what do you do with the cash? And I guess I can't help thinking that even if even if what you can get, the value goes down, are there going to be many things that have as much stability of value?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, we're really talking about not just what an appraised value or even an observed sale of a comparable farm or anything else is about. If you've got good producing ground in this region of the country, I just remind the caller that, one of the reasons why they call this the Nile of the United States is because it is some of the best farm ground in the world. Coming about an asset like that is something that, shouldn't be given lightly to the decision to sell. There is intrinsic value there. I'm not going to predict a market value, but I'm going to say that ability for that ground to produce crops and generate income is an intrinsic value that will not go away.
Okay. Well, we have some other callers here. Let's talk next with someone in Pontiac, line 2. Hello.
Yes, mm-hmm. I have a question about you choosing a financial advisor. Is it best to have one that is fee-based or not?
I would say, generally speaking, you'd probably be better served by someone that's fee-based. That does not mean they're not that there isn't a pool of good people that work in what I would call a commission basis. Okay, there are good people everywhere, but let's just look at the basics. The basics are as follows. A fee-based financial planner should really be rewarded when you do well, and that even gets to the aspect of the fee being based on the value of assets under management. So I think in a prior show, John Masetich, one of the adjunct lecturers that we have come in at the university, who is a professional fee-for-services planner, basically laid it out this simply. When you do well, the value of your assets rises and his fees go up. And when his advice produces a value that means you've gone down, his fees go down too. So the incentives are aligned. With a commission-based relationship, that is not the case. The more transactions that are recommended, the more commissions are generated. That, generally speaking, does not mean anything about your welfare, but certainly does enrichen the planner who gets the commissions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll go on again to someone in Belgium. Line four. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you both.
Mm-hmm.
The last financial show Mr. Inge had, where Mr. Sunu was there, I was tried to get in, but it didn't work out for me. And I wanted to bring up the very topic that you seem to have spoken about a little bit here very recently. That is about real estate, and in these times, about real estate investment. And I personally have just gone through a purchase piece of property, and I was involved with it very, very intimately. I knew it was in foreclosure. I watched foreclosure for a long time, went to the sheriff's sale. It was a City Financial piece of property, which City Financial has lots and lots and lots of these pieces of property that they're trying to move. And so I went along, and at the sheriff's sale, it sold for $42,600, $700 back to the bank. I pursued it. I ended up buying it. It's 7 acres. Three-bedroom house, detached family room, if you can imagine that, and a garage, and I bought it for less than $14,000. Now, that's telling you something about real estate. It's probably about as low as it's going to get right now, okay? I just can't foresee it ever getting much lower because there's so much of it on the market and trying to be moved. So that's probably a pretty good spot to start investing money if you have cash. It seems to me that it's going to give a much better return on the investment than a CD. The unfortunate thing is, it's not very liquid. I have already been offered considerably more than I was paid for this piece of property and I only purchased it in the last 2 weeks. So the market is coming back, and the bargains are available. So I highly encourage people to take advantage of City Financial's woes, if you can possibly do it.
Well, the caller brings up an interesting point, and I would start out by saying, first of all, congratulations on your transaction. I mean, that's obviously a gem.
Yeah.
I'd ring the bell on that trade, so to speak. So, bottom line is this: I want to remember the words of a famous philosopher, Forrest Gump. Okay, real estate is like a box of chocolates. Okay, you never really know what you're going to get.
Exactly right.
Okay, now you've got the bell ringing trade there. I mean, I don't care if the house needs to be pushed in.
Exactly.
I don't care.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is, for any investor to want to do the legwork you did, I agree 112%. The marketplace is so screwed up that there are gem opportunities out there. But again, let me bring you back to a 1942 book, Benjamin Graham, The Intelligent Investor. And very early on in that book, which I read every 5 years, which I need, whether I need to or not, very early on in that book, Graham points out the following. You can either be a passive investor or an active investor. And some people, either from vocation or pure hobby, desire, love, interest, excitement, are active investors. Many people, most people, are passive investors. So I am 112% in agreement with the statement made by the gentleman for the people who choose to be active investors.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I guess that's I think that's sort of worth underlining that, because it sounds as if the success that the man had in this transaction, this was not a matter of luck.
No, this is
no.
This is a matter.
He thought about it a lot.
This is a matter of hard work, due diligence, and the conditions of a totally dysfunctional market.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, guys. As much as people have had this great faith in real estate, and I think one of the things that in the crash that we've just lived through and are still living through, we have seen the folly in that mindset that said, oh, real estate can never lose value. It's always going to go up.
Yeah, well,
it's always going to go up.
I love to remind people there are two words they shouldn't have in their financial vocabulary. One is always and the other is never.
Yeah, well, in any case, we are here for about another, let us say 7-8 minutes in this part of Focus. Kevin Waspy is our guest. He's a lecturer of finance in the College of Business. He'll be with us once a month, always on a Friday to do these money management shows. It may be that we'll be off for a couple months. I'm not quite sure. But eventually, once we get back into a more regular thing with the show, he'll be here, part of this core group that we'll still be relying on to do these regular shows. And so here's the idea. If you have a specific question about your financial situation and you'd like to get a little advice, see what he thinks, well, just give us a call. Tell us about what it is you're thinking about doing, what your concerns are, and he'll tell you what he would advise. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And again, if you want to send us an email, you could send in your question that way, will-talk@illinois.edu.
Very good, David. I think it's absolutely intriguing that your second hour guest calling in is going to be talking about the Eurozone, what's going on, very timely with this weekend's Greek elections.
And that's one thing I thought if we had a little moment here, certainly one of the questions that I want to put to him is the so what question, in the sense that why should this matter to us in the United States, what's happening in Greece or in the Eurozone? And maybe I could put that same question to you. I mean, why does it matter to us here in Central Illinois what happens in Greece?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. It's a good fundamental question. I would begin with saying that the world has become very much more interdependent. Some of the benefits that we've all derived over the past 30 or 40 years of globalizing trade, globalizing commerce, the fact that we've had huge increases in standards of living because things are so easily obtainable from wherever they come in the world. And I'm saying, even to the point of being able to go into a grocery store in January and being able to buy kiwi. We live in Central Illinois, and in January we don't raise a lot of kiwi. I don't think we raise a lot of kiwi in any given month,
but particularly not
in January. So, I mean, even simple things like that come about from the interconnectedness of different economies throughout the world. We talk about diversification as it relates to investment philosophy, whether it's an individual choosing individual securities or an individual choosing individual mutual funds. Diversification is that word. And one of those things about diversifying is the global nature of diversification. So we've gotten huge benefits from having more connectivity. And those benefits come with attendant costs. We are seeing more and more of those attendant costs come about because when one of those elements weakens, that weakness affects the whole body. So welcome to globalization.
Okay. Well, we got at least one more caller here to talk with. About 5 minutes. The caller is in Champaign and on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was calling because I'm looking to retire, hopefully around 62, and I've got a 401k that's operated by the company that I work for. And when 2007 and 8 hit, we lost about 40%. But it wound up coming back pretty strong in the last year and a half. And I guess my question is that if I'm actually ahead of where I was in 2007. So my question, I guess, basically is not to mess with this 401k and just to leave well enough alone.
Let me ask again, how close to retirement are you?
About 5 years.
About five
years. What I'd like to do.
Sure.
That's not necessarily I'm going to be able to.
Sure. But that's your goal?
Yes.
Okay. Have you changed the investment allocations during any of that period from 2007 to the present?
No.
Okay, good. Good. So the good news in what you just told me is you didn't allow the sell-offs back in the marketplace 2007, 2008. You didn't use that or allow that to force you to pull all of the money out of risk assets. That's great. Unfortunately, too many people buy high and sell low, and
yeah.
you're not guilty of it, and that's why, in part, that has come back. Here's what I'm going to say. Moving forward, I would probably look at a good asset allocation strategy and maybe even begin to make it more conservative, but perhaps not change the allocation of my current salary deferrals. Here's what I mean. With my own 403B, I occasionally go in and rebalance based on what's happened to the value of those different asset classes, stocks, bonds, where those investments are, Canada, the U.S., Asia, so on and so forth. And the reason I do that is because I don't want to get the winners to become disproportionately large. And I do believe in cycles, so I'll take what I think are the losers of the moment and buy a little bit more of them. But by and large, I can tell you that over the past 18 years, I have never changed the allocation of how much money every month goes into which one of those funds. So I'm advocating that type of an approach for you. At the moment, you've gotten back to a position where you say, well, I've made up for the loss and more. That's good. I congratulate you. Maybe now a reallocation away from those riskier assets in the event, as you're getting closer to retirement, we get another one of those cataclysmic type of events. But in the meantime, each salary deferral that goes in to purchase those assets, allow that to buy risky assets, because here's where you're using volatility in your favor. When those asset prices decline, a market sell-off, the same number of dollars that are coming each month or each pay period, however it works for you, are buying more of those assets at lower prices. That's the power of a dollar cost averaging process.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, it's kind of what I expected to hear, to be honest, but, you know, you always like a little reinforcement.
Oh, good.
So thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Right.
If somebody wants to call very quickly, we can get him in. Otherwise, we maybe have about a minute or two left. Anything in particular you'd like to leave with folks this time around?
Well, again, it's been a great pleasure being able to be associated with you and the station for as long as we have, and especially with your doing this show. I think it's been a great ride.
Well, it's been a long ride. I think, really, truly, I mean, I think that, you know, when you think about the show, and I don't know how many individual programs you'd consider to be home run. I think we have, when I listen back to shows, I think they always sound better to me than I thought that they were when we were doing them. But I guess the thing that I feel proud about most about the show is that we have managed to do a show at a particular level and have been pretty consistent managing to hold it at that level. Through the hard work also of a lot of the people that support me, and that's really the producers also that I've had over the years. And I think that people who listen to the show don't quite understand just how important people like Harriet Williamson and the other folks that I've had in that support role are. But also the fact that we've had some people like you and a lot of other folks who have given us so many hours of their time so that we could build up this relationship with some core folks who have just, you know, been so generous, and without good guests, you know, you don't have a show.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll just say from my personal experiences, I've loved the association that I've had with the station and all of the people at it.
All right. Kevin Wasby, he's a lecturer in finance at the College of Business here at the U of I. He's our sort of our new resident financial planning guy. You can look for him in the future here to appear once a month, always on Friday, on the show to take your questions on money management.